Good afternoon. I'm Trish England, and welcome to Race Talk with Trish, produced by Dave Wallen and the Racing History Project. I never can say that. Did you know all of our shows are recorded, and you can listen to them forever on the Racing History Project website, www.racinghistoryproject.com. We've got a really special event today. John Fitzpatrick, considered one of the very best Porsche drivers ever. He certainly boasts one of the most active and globally widespread racing careers ever, racing with and against history's greatest drivers. He's been a European GT champ, Porsche Cup winner, IMSA GT champ, Daytona 24-hour winner, Le Mans winner, and much more. And he's the author of Fitz, My Life at the Wheel, available online at your favorite bookstore. Thank you so much for joining us at this unusual time. It's noon in California, 3 p.m. or thereabouts here, and 8 p.m. at John Fitzpatrick's house in England. So mute your phones, please, and let's just hear what John has to say. John,
hi,
my dear, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Oh, my. Everybody remembers so many different cars that you have driven, and our respect just goes off the chart. Tell us how you got started. What was your first car?
When I was 17 and got my driving license, my father bought me a new Mini, which had just been announced in the UK in the sort of 1963. And I got involved in the local motor club and then took the car off the road and converted it to go racing, stripped everything out of it, the seats, the whole bit. So I started off in a Mini. And then I actually progressed the following year to the Works Mini Cooper team. And then from there to Ford and from there to Porsche and just had a great time and was lucky along the way. Never hurt myself. Met a lot of nice people, won a few events, and just generally had a great racing career.
You won a few events, yes, I could say that.
to be fair, the highlight of my career was when I came to live in the States and I drove a Porsche for Dick Barber in the IMSA series and won IMSA, and that was probably the highlight of my career because there was a lot of my friends driving as well, a lot of great drivers driving, a lot of great cars, and of course I went to all the big tracks and I was lucky enough over 3 or 4 years to win at most of the big tracks there, including Daytona and Riverside. So, you know, what more could anybody want?
Wow. Not much. Now, when you were living in the States during that period you were in, so where were you living?
We lived in San Diego. What a terrible place to live. Probably the nicest place in the world I've ever been, San Diego.
Oh, my. Yes, I have been there, and it is beautiful.
Yeah, and I was married there when we went there, and we lived there for 7 years. Both our boys were born there, so they're American citizens as well as British citizens. One of them still works. He works in San Francisco, and the other one works in the other direction. He lives in Moscow, so we're pretty well spread out.
Wow. Interesting at the holiday.
Yeah, good choice of holiday.
Of all the tracks and all the circuits that you ever raced, what was your favorite?
I loved Elkhart Lake. I loved Elkhart Lake. And I won 3 times there. I won a Can-Am race and an IMSA race there, 2 IMSA races. And it's just a fabulous part of the country. The people were so nice. The track is fabulous. And I would say that, I mean, Riverside was very good to me. I had 3 wins at Riverside in 3 years. But Riverside isn't situated in such a beautiful part of the country as Elkhart Lake.
This is true, and Riverside was hot and dusty, but a lot of people miss it. But you've had some bad experiences there too, I know. But
that's absolutely true. Probably the worst experience of my racing life was when we lost our friend Rolf in one of our cars, and mm-hmm. in fact, I just got out and he got in, and that was it. We didn't see him again. But that's motor racing, unfortunately, has its low points and its high points.
I remember it like it was yesterday. That was a terrible moment. Yeah. But Riverside, but Elkhart is still as beautiful as it ever was, and
I can believe it. Wonderful part of the country and a great circuit as well. Lovely circuit.
Oh yeah, I love the way it's run. It's laid out. How'd you like Road Atlanta? That's my home track.
No, Road Atlanta's a great track as well. It's a bit shorter than the others, isn't it? But it's, that last turn coming down over the hill into that right hander before the pits. You know, that's quite a challenge. And I enjoyed Road Atlanta. And the people there, very, very friendly. Very friendly. And of course, it was, I had some great battles there against John Paul Jr. I was successful occasionally and really had a great time. Great circuit. A lot of good tracks in America. Really good tracks.
He had a lot of respect for you.
Lime Rock Super Circuit. Very super mm-hmm. circuit.
Always on Saturdays and Mondays.
So here we are. That's a long time ago.
It has been. I'm going to open it to the audience if anyone has a question or a statement, what have you. Usually we just get crickets. They don't do this until the very end. But sometimes I feel like I leave the audience out of this thing. And they're here. They've joined us. But it's crickets. Okay. At what point did you decide to do the United States? You were doing very well in Europe and in Australia.
Yeah, I tell you, what actually happened was I was at Le Mans in 79 and driving a 935 and... in the next pit was Dick Barber with his car. We got chatting and one thing led to another. And in practice or in a... It was in the pits anyway. I remember him coming to me talking and he said he'd got a good sponsor for the following year. That's 1980. And would I like to drive for him in IMSA? And it happened there in the pits at Le Mans. And it just set... I said yes. I sort of jumped at the opportunity. I'd always enjoyed driving in the States. I'd been there quite often, but never done the full season. And in fact, I took the bull by the horns, and I moved my family over there to San Diego, and spent the next 5-6 years over there. Had a wonderful time.
Yep, you've had some good seasons for sure. I mean, you just came in and slam dunk that first season.
Yeah, Dick had a great car. You know, he went to the Kramers in Germany. He bought the very latest 935. I'd been driving the 935s in Germany, so I was used to them. And we had a great team. I mean, Dick had a great team, and we had great mechanics and great helpers. If I hadn't won the championship, it would have been my fault. It wouldn't have been his fault. That's for sure. So, I have a lot to thank him for, he'll be a friend forever.
At what point did you leave Barber and start your own?
Dick, in 80, when we won the championship, Dick, he had a sponsor, which was Sachs, but... he spent an awful lot of money, much, much more than the sponsorship, and he decided to pull out at the end of the year. And Sachs came to me at the end of 80 and said, what did I want to do? And I said, I wanted to stay in the States. And they said, well, they were prepared to sponsor me if I set up my own team, which I did. Dick didn't want to carry on. I think Dick had overspent a lot.
It's not hard to do.
Yeah, not hard at all. So I had Sachs sponsorship in my first year and my second year, and then the 956 Porsche came out, and we bought one of those to run. But then IMSA decided not to let the 956 run, so I bought the car, and the only place we could run it was in Europe. So Sandra and I moved back to Europe with our kids, and we set up the team in Silverstone and carried on from there, which was a great shame because I loved driving in the States. People were so good to me, and really, if I had the drive and the sponsorship, you know, we'd still be there now, to be honest.
Well, it's not too late. We're still here.
Yeah, but I'm too old.
Oh, well, you start all over. But you're managing teams and drivers now, and
well, to be absolutely correct now, I've really pulled out of that now. I'm taking a back seat. I'm getting a bit too old. Things are changing a lot. And whereas at one time my name and my career and successes gave me a lot of entree into various sponsors and that type of thing, but that's going back a long way now, and there's a lot of other people involved who've done the same or better, and it just became too expensive, to be honest. You really need the backing of a factory to really do well. And of course, that couldn't happen with Porsche because they had their own team and their own sponsors with Rothmans.
That's right. That's right.
But I had a great time in the States, and I was sad to have to leave the States. I enjoyed living there so much.
If I could just live at Delta Coronado, I'd be happy.
Yeah, San Diego is a great place.
There is a photograph of you that I've seen that shows you in a 935 that's strangely missing its driver's door.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What the world happened to that?
Yeah, that's right. That was the year before in 79 when I was driving for the George Lowe's team in Germany, and we came over to do one or two races in the States. And that was at the Glen, and I remember now what happened. I came into the pits. No, I was driving with Tran Hazemans. He came into the pits to do the driver change, and opened the door before the car stopped. And of course, those doors are all fiberglass. And he stopped quickly at the box, the door flew forward and broke off its hinges. So I got in the car and they put the door on, and they had to tape the door. They put masking tape or tank tape all around the door, and off I went. But after about 10 laps going down the straight, the sort of high speed and the air going over the door, it sucked the door off. So suddenly it's about 170, 180 mile an hour down the straight, the door disappeared. And I'm not sure if we retrieved the door, but we pressed on. I didn't stop. We were worried, or the team were worried, that the organisers would pull us in and black flag us, but they didn't. And in fact, we won the race without the door. So
and somebody got a really nice souvenir.
I think one of the teams complained that the car was underweight, but then we explained that the door was all was fiberglass, so it didn't weigh anything really. And anyway, the organizers were more than happy to let us win.
Oh, wow. That's romantic enough. I'm just glad it didn't hit somebody. And yeah. Just flew across the track like a large frisbee. And yeah. Oh, no. That must have been scary.
Yeah, that was
How long did it take you to write your book?
It took me 12 months, and I was doing sort of 4 days a week. I'd do 2 or 3 hours in the evening, and it took me a year to write the book. And but to be honest with you, I really enjoyed it. It was great, you know, looking everything up, remembering all those things, being able to tell a few stories that people didn't know. And I really enjoyed it, and it's been really well received. It's sold incredibly well over here, and they're on a second reprint, which is great.
Well, it's available here. I looked it up.
It is or isn't?
I've got an idea. This will keep you busy for a while. Why don't you write a fiction version of your story?
A fiction version? Well, I think...
Yeah.
If people read
a novel, a racing novel. We don't have enough of those.
I think if somebody reads my book, they'll probably think it is fiction.
Well, that's a life well lived, don't you think?
Well, it is. And to be fair, I was very, very lucky in my career. Very, very lucky. Always happened to be in a good car at the right time and in the right place. And had a few accidents, but never hurt myself, and I was lucky.
Let's see, I'm going to take a commercial break here. Brought to you, Race Talk with Trish, by Dave Wallen and the Racing History Project. All our shows are recorded, and you can listen to them forever on the Racing History Project website, www.racinghistoryproject.com. Okay, tell us a really wild story.
A wild story?
Yeah, that would normally be middle of the night at Le Mans.
I don't know, a wild story. I mean, I suppose motor racing is a bit wild all the time, really, but... the weirdest story was the Watkins Glen story, where I lost the door. And funny enough, a couple of the teams wanted us disqualified for being underweight, but the organisers wouldn't do that. But I don't really have any really wild stories.
Oh, I'm so disillusioned. Okay, who are your favourite co-drivers? Because they've got wild stories.
I think my favorite has to be David Hobbs.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, and that's nothing against guys like Derek Bell and Bob Warwick and all those sort of guys. But, you know, David is, he's a lovely guy, David, and he's a hell of a good driver. And, you know, never complained, and the car wasn't always perfect, and but Dave never complained. And he's a great driver, and he knows how to set up a car, and... That was probably the best times of my racing life was driving with Dave, because Mags always came with him. His wife was always there, and Mags and my wife Sandra got on so well together, and they'd be there doing the timing and the lap scoring, and we had a great time. And I speak to David a lot, and see him as often as I can, and. The best years of my life, really, were racing towards the end of my racing career with David. It was really terrific.
Well, I have every intention of getting him on the show one time, sometime in the future, and you'll have to patch in and do tag team with him, because that would be really a marvelous show, don't you think?
Yeah, think of a couple of stories to embarrass him. That would be good.
Oh, you'll have to help us with that.
Yeah, he's a great guy and a great driver. I mean, he's, you know, he's done everything, hasn't he? Formula One, Indy, sports cars, everything.
Mm-hmm. Plus, he was good with the public. He was great at marketing his team, and you know,
just, oh yeah, yeah,
he could talk to anybody about anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The last time I saw you, I guess, was at the banquet of 82 when David was the MC that night.
The IMSA banquet, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, that probably was. Jesus, that's nearly 40 years ago, Trish.
I know that. I'll tell you a quick story about that. This is supposed to be about you, but I was sitting at a table, and Bobby Rahal and his wife Debbie were there with us. She was pregnant with Graham. I guess must have been. I drew his portrait in ink pen on the tablecloth. And it was a good likeness. And he took out a little pocket knife and just cut it out of the tablecloth and took it with him.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Typical David.
That was a fun night. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And Mr. Hobbs was wonderful. It made it great.
Yeah, David's great. And he's a great commentator, isn't he, as well?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, he really is.
David and Bob Varsha.
Yeah, and Bob, yeah.
Are just my favorites. And we've already had a show with Bob. And that was a fun night.
Okay. Because the thing with David, I mean, he's been there, done it all, and he knows what he's talking about, doesn't he? And he really is. He's tremendous. That was probably the most fun year that we ever had. My wife Sandra and I talk about it a lot.
All right. Somebody help me out here. I'm going to need some more questions for Mr. Fitzpatrick. Dave, you up there?
I'm here. Hey, John, one question I have for you.
Yep.
You brought a 956 to the Can-Am and won. And there must be a story connected with that. The Can-Am people must have been surprised to see you there.
Yeah, I think a better word would be when I won, they weren't surprised, they were pissed off. they were not happy at all because they got all their Can-Am competitors with all these fabulous cars who'd spent a lot of money. And they decided to, to invite me to drive there, and I beat them all, and they weren't happy at all. And in fact, I don't know if you remember, but they banned the car after that. They wouldn't let it run. I did Mossport and Elkhart Lake, and they then banned it. And they said that the reason they banned it is because the center line, the driver's feet were just in front of the center line of the front wheels, and it was dangerous. So they banned it. So what then happened was Porsche then immediately built the 962 with a slightly longer wheelbase so that the driver's feet were not in front of the front axle. And, of course, IMSA had no choice then but to let it through. And, of course, Al Holbert entered one, and he won everything with it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's... That was the story behind that, but I was disappointed because I enjoyed driving them, in the Can-Am. It was great, but they didn't like it.
Why?
Well, because, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they didn't. It wasn't so much the organizers that didn't like it. It was the actual Can-Am competitors who didn't like it. That someone had come in without a proper Can-Am car and had beaten them, and it was really, I think it was a movement by the competitors to have us banned, but it didn't do any good because Porsche remodeled the car very slightly, and of course it came back and won everything.
You were the inspiration for the 962 then.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. Yeah.
Take credit for it. I would. So where else did you get to run that 956?
Well, we ran it in Europe. I mean, we ran it in the full season in Europe. The problem for us, of course, in Europe, we were up against the Porsche factory team, the Rothmans cars. So it was difficult for us to compete against them. But we did have one big win at Brands Hatch, 1,000 kilometres, with Derek Warwick and myself. And we beat the Rothmans cars fair and square. And it was wet for about half of the race. And I always ran Goodyear tyres, and the factory were on Dunlop tyres, and that helped us a lot. But we were one of the very, very few teams that actually ever beat the Rothmans cars. So we're quite proud of that.
Wow. I would be too.
And to be fair, Derek Warwick, he was Formula One driver at the time, and he was fabulous in the car. And I forget which team he was driving for, but he always said that winning that race got him his factory Formula One drive with Renault the following year. So that was nice for him as well.
Wow. I remember him as a driver.
Derek, yeah. Very low-key, you know, very low-key sort of guy, but really fast.
Yeah, I like him low-key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
British car fans out there, dig back into the distant past and tell us about racing broad-speed minis and Escorts and Anglias and such.
Early on in my career, I raced this mini which I'd got, and I'd prepared it myself and stripped it all out. It was light and that sort of thing. And one day I'm driving into Birmingham along this Stratford Road, the road between Stratford and Avon and Birmingham. And I stopped at a small, very small gas station with a workshop behind it to get some fuel. And I opened the front of the car to check the oil. And it had twin carburetors instead of a single carburetor. And this guy in a really messy overall came out and he had a look and he said, What's all this? I said, oh, we've modified the car. It's made a big difference. He said, oh, excuse my language, but he said, that's all a load of crap. Look what you've done. He said, this is terrible. So I said, well, it's not too bad. He said, no, it's rubbish. He said, come back tomorrow, leave the car with me for a few days, and I'll sort it out. And that was a Ralph Broad of Broad Speed. And he'd just started to get into the competition thing. And I gave him the mini and after a few days picked it up and it went like the wind and I won everything with it. I won the championship with it in England. And Ralph then started to get into motor racing very seriously. And I drove for him for quite a while. His last season, he ran the two Jaguars for Jaguar. Which actually, it didn't go well because Jaguar didn't give us time to do all the testing. So we were out there racing, but almost every race something was breaking. We were testing, but Ralph was one of these unrecognized wizards, mechanical wizards. And if it wasn't for him, I really wouldn't have had a racing career. He really started me off. Because I'd driven for him, I then also drove the Cooper Car Company, asked me to drive for them in their works minis. And then I started to do well in that. And then Ford Motor Company asked me to drive for them. And I won the British Touring Car Championship in a Ford. Then I went to Ford Germany driving Caprice. And I was at the Nürburgring in 19... Oh, I'm just trying to remember what it was. But I was driving a Ford at the Nürburgring, and I was in the pits, and this guy came up to me and was chatting, and it was Erwin Kramer. And he asked me what I was doing the following year, and I said, nothing planned yet. And Erwin Kramer and his brother Manfred, the Kramer brothers, they asked if I'd like to drive their Porsche in the German Championship in some international event. And of course I jumped at the chance. The car was great, and I won the European Championship in it the first year, and won a lot of races, you know, in various places in the world. And really, that got me going into Porsches, and I never looked back after that. Drove for various Porsche teams, and then eventually set up my own team. And of course, having got into the Porsche thing, that's really what got me into Dick Barber's team as well, and won. You know, won the Inter Championship. It's just, you've got to be in the right place at the right time. And I think every driver who had some success, he'll say that he was lucky because he was in the right place at the right time, and the right people saw what he did, and the right people asked him to drive. And, you know, there's a lot of luck involved. I mean, there are a lot of guys out there who are just as quick as me, quicker than me, who never had the opportunity. You've just got to have the opportunity and be lucky.
I can imagine you as a young man and being these opportunities coming your way and being so excited with all the wins and all the progress and the development of your career must have been just... You must have been the happiest boy on earth.
Yeah, it was. And because the great thing about it was that when I started, the first couple of years or so, my father was footing the bills for my car and the work on it and all that sort of thing. And suddenly, someone else was paying the bills, and they were paying me for actually doing it. So there was a world of difference. And, of course, I was happy. My father was very happy because he wasn't having to put his hand in his pocket after every weekend. So it all worked out very well. And when I left school, I went to work in his business for a very short time before I got into the professional motor racing. And I always say to everybody, you know, I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I've never really had to work. I've earned money by doing something which a lot of people would give their right arm for. And I had a wonderful time. I've been paid for doing it. What more could you want? And I'm still here to talk about it as well, which sadly quite a lot of my friends aren't.
Yes, this is true. And then a year go by that we say goodbye to some of the people we've watched for so many years. And it's not easy.
No, it's not. That's the downside of the sport. Of course, you lose a lot of friends. And I've had some big accidents. I've had some, not a lot, but I have. The ones I've had have been fairly big. And I've never hurt myself. Never really had a bruise or anything. I was very, very lucky. In fact, in the Porsche 956. The year before I stopped, we were at, where were we? At it was the year, I think it was the year after we won at Brands Hatch. I was out there in qualifying, and I'd just overtaken somebody at the back of the circuit, and the left front tyre let go. I just went straight into the guardrail, bounced back across the track, upside down in the air, and the other guy drove underneath me. And I've got a photograph of it, with me upside down, him driving underneath. My car landed on its wheels, and I got out, and I didn't have a scratch, nothing at all. And that is lucky.
Oh, that is my heart just stopped when you said that. I just visualized it.
I've been lucky, very lucky.
We've made a lot of friends.
I met a lot of people and made a lot of friends, and and it's been my whole life. I mean, I've never really had a proper job, to be honest. Unless you call driving a racing car a job, but I never looked at it as a job. I just looked at it as it's something I wanted to do. I enjoyed doing it, and just got on with it. But what more could you want? Make a living doing something you loved.
Did you collect any of those cars? Do you have any garage full of these race cars?
No, I don't, because until the last couple of years, I was always driving someone else's car. And then when I had my own team, I had sponsorship, but not massive sponsorship. So, you needed to sell one car to buy the other one. And so I never did collect any cars. And by the time I got to the end of my career, a Porsche 956, I mean, you're looking at $250,000 for a car. So
back then, yes.
Oh, yeah. Now.
A lot more now.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the way it was. I've got no complaints. I'm quite happy. I'm still here, still able to talk to you. My wife's very relieved. and I've got a couple of great kids, so there we are.
Well, who aside from David Hobbs do you still keep up with?
I see a lot of Derek Bell. We go to Florida every winter, although we haven't been for 12 months because of the COVID, but we'll probably go in November. I usually go to Vero Beach in Florida, and Derek lives there. Brian Redman lives there, and David is there, not in the summer. He goes back to Elkhart Lake area, but he's generally there when we're there. So it's almost like going to a race meeting and meeting, your co-drivers. And we all sit there and tell each other how good we used to be, and you know what it's like, telling a lot of lies.
No, they're not. At least this is the truth. We're trying to get Brian to join us one time, but so far we've just come up against a brick wall. So the next time you speak with him, tell him that I need to speak with him, and see if we can get this arranged. He would the two of you together would make a great show.
Well, Brian would be very good. I mean, he's very amusing, Brian. He's very low-key, but he is quite, very amusing. So as and when you do get him, and I'll tell him I've been on and what I've done. So hopefully...
And it wasn't terrible.
Hopefully you can get him on board.
Well, doing vacations with him would be kind of, were you there during the hurricane when I thought we'd lost him?
No, I wasn't. But I mean, I can imagine it's not a nice place to live, is it? Sometimes down in Vero Beach. I mean,
he was in the Bahamas and was.
Oh, that's right. He was in the Bahamas at the time, wasn't he? Yes.
Yes, and he was on ground zero.
That's right. Exactly.
And was out of touch for days. Nobody knew, what had happened. So don't y'all do that again, okay?
Is that last year?
Or less. A couple of years ago. A
couple of years ago, yeah. Yeah, I don't envy in that, that's for sure.
During all of this time, what day?
To get Brian and David together when John's in Florida, so we're in a reasonable time zone.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm sure we could sort that out.
I would love that.
Yeah, because David will be down there in November. We'll be there in November. And I'm sure if we get Brian, in fact, every 3 or 4 weeks, I do a Zoom with Brian, Brian, Derek, David, Howden, Ganley, and myself. And... We just have a good time, and this Zoom program is fabulous, isn't it?
I'm not smart enough to figure it out. I don't have the.
It's not
camera.
If we dumb racing drivers can manage it, I'm sure you'll manage it all right.
Somebody's just going to have to come over and show me how to do them.
Yeah, it's not too difficult.
No. Anybody in the audience? Hello? Got questions out there? Unmute yourself and say hey.
I think we got no comments. We can go ahead and finish us up.
Well, John, any postscripts for us tonight?
Not really. I think we've covered everything. I mean, to be honest, I miss my friends in America. Sandra and myself, we often say, you know, we wish we hadn't left America. I mean, we left because of the sponsorship that we were getting, wanted to race in Europe, and that's why we moved back, and then that led on to something else. But really, the best times of our life were when we were racing in the States. So we think about it a lot, and we love going back.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing from you when you do get back in the fall, when you see sort of when you think you'll be in town. Let us know. So we'll make sure to create a spot for you, and that will be with plenty of notice to let everybody know that this is going to be a rock'em sock'em show. It really will.
When we've got our dates together, I'll talk to Derek and David and see if they're going to be around at the time. And I'll let you know the time scale, and you can organize something.
Fantastic. Wouldn't that be great? thank you for that. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Our shows are recorded, and you can listen to them on the Racing History Project. Our next show will be July 14th at our regular time, 6 p.m. Pacific and 9 p.m. Eastern. Our guest that night will be IMSA winners Rob Dyson and Price Cobb, and this one will be a hoot. And you remember both of those. I know you do.
Absolutely.
What cars were you racing against them at the time? I guess 952, 962. Porsches.
Porsches.